the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to Beyond the Pitch. I'm your host as always, Phil Brown, and absolutely delighted to be joined with the magnificent Gabriel Marcotti. Gab has been a regular on our show over the years. It's always great to have this man back. There's very few things this guy doesn't know anything about in football, and if there isn't something he doesn't know, it's not worth knowing. So it's good to have him on. Gab, how you doing?
Good, you're too kind.
That's all right. You told me to say that. Did I say it right?
All good.
So much to talk about last night, of course. This incredible game with Juventus, Real Madrid. Must say, I thought the game was over, as I thought the Roma game was over. Juventus came out and put this unbelievable performance, and such is the nature of football, it's incredibly cruel. Gives Real Madrid a penalty in the very, very, very last minute. And look, if that's in the fifth minute, it's a penalty to me. And I know that if it's in the fifth minute or the last minute, it should be the same decision. But I go back and forth, penalty, not a penalty. It just seems so unfair and so cruel on Juventus to give that penalty in the last minute. What was your take on the game, Gab?
All right, so first of all, the fact that we're talking about the penalty and the sending off, I mean, you mentioned Juve were outstanding. I got to be honest, I didn't think they had it in them to go and approach this game in that way. You know, 3-0 down from a first leg when you got destroyed at home.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't even close. And I think, you know, in some ways, a tremendous amount of credit needs to go to Max Allegri for the way he set it up. Zidane tried to fix it at halftime. You know, you can go break down the individual incidents. You know, I thought Isco, his goal was probably onside, but, you know, without VAR, that decision's not going to be given. And we might have, if that goal had ended up being the difference, you know, we might have ended up talking about that.
Right.
And obviously Navas made a big blunder, another goal, but Juventus were simply outstanding. And it's not something that, you know, we've seen them with sort of the heroic comeback in the past. And I realize, like, you know, I had to say that because I think, you know, there were a bunch of players out there who really were outstanding on the day against, you know, the team that's favored to win the Champions League right now and that have won the last two Champions Leagues. So I think we have to acknowledge that. As for the penalty, I mean, I think it's a classic, seen them given, seen them not given.
Right.
You know, I think we always have to remember, what does the referee see on the pitch? You know, and I think he saw some contact in the back. He saw Benassia was obviously recovering because Juve had the wrong positioning. Cristiano Ronaldo set it up perfectly for Lucas Vazquez. I don't think he had any idea whether or not Benassia got the ball. I think replay shows that he probably did. But, I mean, I don't have a problem with the penalty. I mean, I think, you know, he did what he called it as he saw it at the time on the pitch. And even though it's the 93rd minute, I know some people have made the NBA analogy, you know, how like in the final minutes of an NBA game, you know, when you drive to the basket, you know, you get absolutely karate chopped and mullered and nobody ever calls a foul. And that's great. And maybe it should be like that, but it's not like that in real life because that's a different sport. So, you know, it's a roundabout way of saying, you know, fine, I could completely understand why he gave the penalty. I don't have a problem. I don't think it was clear cut, but I don't have a problem with that at all.
Well, when I look at the Manchester derby at the weekend, I thought Martin Atkinson refereed the occasion as much as the game. Because to me, that Ashley Young incident, that's a penalty. As much as it's hard for me to admit that. But I think Martin Atkinson's looked at the game, context of the game, and said, if I'm not sure, I'm going to err on the side of caution and give the defender the benefit of the doubt, considering the occasion, considering the game, considering there's so much riding on this. I just think if you're in a position of doubt, and we'll never know if Michael Oliver was in a position of doubt, you have to err on the side of caution. And for me, I want to see a game-changing decision be a bit more clear-cut. And if it's not clear-cut, you can't give it. And I just feel I mean, look, I'm not buying into Buffon. Buffon, if I remember correctly, Sully Montari scored a goal. It was 2 yards over the line in 2012 when Juventus played Milan. Buffon pulled it back and was happy to get away with that transgression. So I'm not saying he's any pariah or anything. I can understand why he's upset. But to me, it just seemed like an awful harsh decision to eliminate Juventus on after such an unbelievable comeback. And I just think Michael Oliver shouldn't have given it. But look, it's not a robbery or anything, but I do sympathize with Juventus.
I think there's another point to be made here, and I think as a United fan, you know, you'll appreciate this. When it comes to league football, you know, bigger clubs get the calls.
No question.
You know, it's just there's no question about that, right? Mm-hmm. So then what happens is you get a contentious decision. And it goes your way, and people accuse referees of favoring the big clubs and Fergie time and mm-hmm. all that stuff, right? And then the big clubs say, well, you know, you need to learn how to accept decisions and, you know, why are you such bad losers, right? And now we get the situation where the shoe is on the other foot when it comes to Juventus. You know, and I think that is also probably difficult for some people to deal with when it comes to the penalty. Now, where I think Oliver got it wrong and panicked and lost his marbles a little bit was on the sending off.
Yeah.
And I stick by that.
Right? So, yeah, he definitely shouldn't have sent them off.
Here's the thing, right? You know, you talked before about Atkinson managing situations. Referees are taught to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can debate whether it's right or wrong, but you know, their professionals and their employers tell them, you know, this is how we want you to referee to manage a situation.
Right.
And I think when he gave that penalty, he knew that Juventus were going to have this reaction, and I think he was going to let them vent, and that was all that it was going to be. And I don't think he was going to send Buffon off. I don't think people said like. People have said, I mean, Peter Walton, you know, wrote, and I respectfully disagree with him, he wrote on our website today for ESPN, you know, he said, well, you know, Buffon manhandled the referee. And, you know, you can watch the video.
Yeah.
He didn't. It's just simply not true. The players all surrounded him, and they shouted at him, and they got mm-hmm. in his face. And there obviously was contact. This thing that Steve Nichols said last night on the show that, well, if there's contact, it's an automatic red. It's just not true.
Joe Hart put his head into Michael Oliver and didn't get sent off.
Well, precisely. And I think Michael Oliver was going to say, I'm going to let them shout. If somebody gets too close or whatever, I'll flash a yellow, and that's going to be that. I think the deciding factor, and this only came to me after I watched the video, you know, a bunch of times, is if you watch, when he's being surrounded, he gets a pretty big shove, and he gets shoved into Buffon, and he gets a pretty big shove by Douglas Costa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty evident, actually. And then he turns, and then at that stage, Buffon, who, by the way, is holding the ball, so this idea that he laid his hands on him is more nonsense. You know, Buffon is simply standing a foot away from him, and he's shouting at him. And that's when he shows the red card. I think he was rattled because Douglas Costa, because Douglas Costa shoved him, and I think that was a tipping point for him, and you know, and he turned and he sent Buffon off, and you know, again, it's a heated environment for him as well. With hindsight, I think the thing to do would have been to send Douglas Costa off and to book Buffon. Now, all this comes with the caveat that we don't know what was said, right? So it's possible that Buffon said something absolutely horrible to him. We don't know that. And, you know, we may never know that. But yeah, I mean, to me, again, with hindsight, not being there with 90,000 screaming fans and whatever else, you know, that's how I would have handled it. And I've spoken to a couple of referees, and they said, you know, in those situations, you know they're going to get mad.
Of course.
And you let them vent. And then you step away, you avoid, you defuse the situation. That's your job. And I think in his own way, that's what he tried to do. And then the shove from Douglas Costa was a tipping point.
So here we have an interesting quartet in the semifinals. Real Madrid, who, when you go back to the Super Cup, outclassed Manchester United, started the season as favourite. Then Tottenham showed that, well, maybe they're human. Juventus have shown this team, this is a very, very good Real Madrid team, but beatable. You see their form in the Liga, which is not great. I've seen other Spanish football commentators heavily criticise Barcelona and the quality of their squad. Liverpool, probably the least of the four in there, after Bayern Munich, being a team that you would fancy to go on and win it. But Liverpool are playing my house money here, Gab, because they're the team that, like, we got nothing to lose here. We're in a semi-final. Who would you tip to win it at this point?
Well, you said Liverpool playing with
house
money.
Yeah, because they're...
I agree with you on Liverpool. I mean, Roma, I would say even more so.
Yeah, Roma, of course.
Liverpool at that
yeah, point. Yeah, that's fair, Roma as well.
I think there's a pretty big gap between Real Madrid and everybody else. I agree the Liga form's been up and down and whatever else, but obviously they were, you know, they had the rear ends handed to them for an hour or so by Juventus. But there's just so much quality in this team. There's so much experience. They have so many different solutions. There seems to be a really good ethos to this team as well. And they've won it twice before. And I think all these things put together, I know people will point towards Bayern. My problem with Bayern right now is, and this could change if Manuel Neuer comes back and is fit and whatever. But my problem with Bayern is they really haven't been tested really since right. December. And I think it's really difficult to tell what sort of Bayern team this is, because they've had such a big lead in the Bundesliga that what Heinkes has done is he's rotated his squad very heavily throughout, which means that they're all really well rested. I looked up the stats. Lewandowski has played something like 600 minutes less than Cristiano at this stage, which is pretty remarkable, you know, come the end of the season. And he's been fit pretty much the whole year. So what strikes you is that I just don't know how good they are because against Besiktas, Besiktas had a guy sent off after 15 minutes with a score at 0-0. And then, they go ahead and they win 5-0, and that's that. And against Seville in the first leg, I thought they really, really struggled. Were extremely fortunate to win. And, last night they simply managed the lead that they had at home and, no real fuss. Even Bayern, even domestically, if you look at their performances in the last 6 months against, the other good teams in the Bundesliga, I think they beat Schalke 1-0, and it was a really, really tight game. They lost to Leipzig, of course. Borussia Dortmund in the Cup, they only won 2-1. And then they absolutely molded Borussia Dortmund the last time they played them. But, we haven't really seen the best 11 dominant Bayern team. I think you just don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah, that's fair. There's been no litmus test, really, of this Bayern team, and that's unfortunately one of the side effects of playing in the Bundesliga, is that PSG maybe suffer from this a bit, is you just never know how good they are. With that in mind, Roma, of course, as we quite rightly said, unbelievable to come back from 4-1 down the first leg to beat Barcelona at home. Fantastic to see them in the semi-final. I haven't been in a semi-final since '84, I believe, whenever they played Liverpool in the final, I believe it. If I'm correct in saying that.
That's right.
Magnificent achievement for them to come back. Where part of the brilliance of that was how anonymous Lionel Messi was in that game. And very rarely do you see Lionel Messi anonymous in any game, especially in a game where Barcelona badly need him. And it's hard to argue that Barcelona have gone forward since the sale of Neymar. Valverde didn't rotate. Picked a bizarre lineup, dropped Dembele, of course, and played Sergio Roberto, and really got punished for their negativity. I can understand why they've went to Roma 4-1 up, thinking we can sacrifice a striker. But, despite Barcelona's domestic form, Valverde's not exactly winning the hearts and minds of the Barcelona people, is he?
No, he's not. And, you know, when you win and lose, obviously blame has to get shared around and it's easy to scapegoat the manager. But this was one situation where I think Valverde got everything wrong. You know, dropping, I don't know, maybe he didn't believe that that Roma were going to press high the way they did. But the remarkable thing is he didn't even make any substitutions until they were 2-0 down. And you could tell, you know, early in the game that Messi was having an off day. Luis Suarez was nowhere to be seen. I think his only contribution was rolling around and trying to, you know, eating up 2 minutes of the clock. Mm. You know, at that point, putting in somebody with legs, if you are gonna hit long balls, and I saw this incredible statistic that it was something like sort of 18% of their passes were long passes because they couldn't play out from the back because Roma's press was so high and so good. At that point, you got to put in another guy with wheels, right? Somebody who can run, whether it's Dembele, whether it's Paco Alcácer, who, you know, might not be very good, but is certainly, you know, a lot quicker than Messi and Suarez. That I think was a real failing. You know, in Valverde's defense, you know, we have to recognize the absolute mess. I mean, and really the car crash that Barcelona were in August. And the fact that, you know, Dembele arrives and then he gets injured straight away. And obviously they only got Coutinho in January. But, you know, the warning signs were there. And we saw it against Chelsea. You know, against Chelsea, they would have gone out, but for some craven individual mistakes by Chelsea players, which Roma players did not make. And by the fact that Christensen in the first leg and Courtois in the second leg. And by the fact that, you know, Lionel Messi, you know, was outstanding.
Right.
And it really was a Messi-dependent team. And that's something that, you know, that they're going to have to work on.
Let me ask you about Liverpool, because Liverpool are in the semi-final. And for me, they've absolutely... 5-1 is an emphatic scoreline. And for me, the better team over both legs really started to erode the air of invincibility around Manchester City. Jurgen Klopp, not just with Liverpool against Man City, against Guardiola, but also going back to his Dortmund days, has a fantastic record against Guardiola. This is, you'd have to say, Klopp has done a brilliant job getting them to the semi-final. Can they go on and win this game?
I think they can. I think it depends on the draw, you know. Liverpool have certain frailties. I mean, I watched that game, you know, the return leg with Stevie Nicol, who was, as you can imagine, was a nervous wreck here at ESPN HQ here in Bristol. And, you know, let's not forget, a couple of those Andy Robertson incidents could well have been penalties. That goal that was disallowed, which led to Guardiola sending off. You know, I still haven't quite figured out why it was disallowed. And so, you know, that first half could have taken a totally different turn. And then all of a sudden, you know, if you're City and you're 2-0 up at halftime, and then Klopp has to think more about how he's going to play and whatever else. So, you know, there are differences. The good news is they're not going to play anybody like Manchester City again in this competition, and they certainly have, you know, they certainly have the tools to do it, and they're just very awkward to play against with that front three.
For all the plaudits that Pep Guardiola's been getting, the last week has not been a great week for him. But forget about the United game for a second. Let's take a look at his Champions League record. Hasn't been in a final since 2011, Gab. And is routinely, once they get to the latter stages of competitions, routinely getting knocked out, and by some margin too. I mean, it's not like they're narrowly losing quarterfinals. The question I have with Guardiola is, do the top teams, are the top teams too clever to play, to get sucked into what Guardiola's game plan is? Because it seems like once they reach the very, very top, the best teams in Europe don't have too many difficulties against the way he plays. Look, it's brilliant to watch, but If Guardiola, I was asking Mark Ogden this the other day, one of your colleagues at ESPN, if he doesn't win the Champions League at City, would that constitute failure? And he said, well, look, he was brought in to win the Champions League, so in that sense, yes. But I don't know if you can measure success based purely on trophies. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. But is it fair to have question marks over Guardiola?
I mean, it's fair to question when he makes decisions that go wrong. And, you know, let's not forget, you know, he makes mistakes too, like everybody else. You know, he went into last season thinking like, oh, look, I can play with Bakary Sagna and Gael Clichy as my fullbacks and everything's going to be fine, and get them to play in that way. And, you know, he brought in Nolito and he said he didn't like him. And, you know, and he makes mistakes like everybody else. I don't think judging on the basis of knockout competitions, especially knockout competition that, you know, the guy has already won twice, let's not forget. I don't think that's fair. I mean, I thought the Monaco game last year was an absolute car crash of a game where he was probably outcoached, but those were two ties that really could have gone either way. And, you know, in Liverpool, who knows? I mean, you know, normally you think, oh, there's no chance of somebody coming back from three goals down. But then, of course, we've seen it happen twice, right? In the last 2 days. So, you know, I think if that goal stands at the end of the first half and you're 2-0 up at home, then all of a sudden, you know, you like your chances. So, you know, it's close. I agree with you.
Defensively, Gabriel,
what's that?
Defensively, they're all over the place. If you look at Pogba's goal, Pogba runs for 40 yards, nobody tracks him, and they just seem so open at the back.
Okay. Now you go back to United, and there I'm going to agree with you, because that was just bad. That second half was terrible. That was also United being very good, and United having outstanding players who can, you know, who can do outstanding things. I mean, you know, Pogba's been such a talking point all year, but that headed goal, and bear in mind, heading is the weakest part of his game. Sanchez floats the ball.
Yeah,
it's not like Sanchez, like, you know, whips put it on a dime. He's in the air. He has to crane his neck like some kind of, like, demented giraffe athletically, and then still steer the ball past the keeper. That is an outstanding piece of technical ability. You know, great players do things like that. And you got to allow for that. I mean, I don't know what happened in that second half. I think it's also true that, you know, if Gundogan scores like he should have at the start of the second half, then, you know, maybe there's a different narrative there. But look, I don't think Guardiola's perfect. I think he makes mistakes. I think his system will always occasionally lead to defensive breakdowns. And when they concede, they're going to look especially silly. But, you know, to go and say, no, he's rubbish because, you know, he was brought to Bayern to win the Champions League and he didn't do it, and he might not do it at City. Yeah, I mean, I think that's over the top. And that's like my friend Duncan Castles. That's like his, that's his territory.
Yeah, that's the PR wing of Just a Fruit Day. That's a different individual. But look, anybody that tries to claim Guardiola and be that polemic that's ridiculous. I mean, the guy's clearly a world-class coach and clearly one of the top 2 to 3 coaches in the world. I'm just questioning it with a team that open eventually when you play quality where they'll take chances. I just wonder if City need to tighten up a bit before they can move on. But I want to move on from that because I want to ask you about a couple of other things. Fabio Capello retired this week, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I do apologize, but Fabio Capello retired this week.
No.
And one of the things he said, Gab, was Italy has no quality anymore. It's not producing players anymore. Italy, as much as I malign the world rankings, which are virtually meaningless, I'm going to use it to strengthen my argument here, or my point. They're the lowest ranked they've ever been since these rankings began. What is going on with Italian football?
So, max respect to Fabio Capello and everything he's achieved, but the dude's been living in China. you know, And I actually think there's a clutch of very, very good, exciting young players.
I do too.
That are coming through. I think sometimes, you know, when somebody's not on the ground and he's not paying attention to Serie A, and mm-hmm. he hasn't been, and he looks at the results, and, you know, he sees Italy getting knocked out by Sweden, and assuming he watched that game, I don't know, maybe he's doing something else. You come to conclusions, and you look at Juve, and it says, oh, their Italian players are still all the old guys and whatever else. But, you know, I just think this is completely wrong reading. I think there is a clutch of very gifted young players coming through. They don't all play for the top sides. They're going to grow. Some of them are going to make it. Some of them are not. One of the reasons I think the situation looks a little more dire than it is that, you know, probably the two best players that in sort of their age group and sort of the, you know, the 25 to 27 age group that Italy has produced recently are both frightfully inconsistent. And, you know, one is Marco Verratti and the other one is Mario Balotelli, who is obviously it's a whole other raft of issues there. And so, you know, we don't have a superstar in his 20s. You know, the only superstar we have in his 20s who plays for a legitimately big club is, for better or worse, is Verratti, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know Manchester United are a massive club, but I think Damian would be the first to say that he's not a superstar.
Did you just say there? He's not Manchester United are a massive club, but Damian's not a superstar?
Yeah, I think he'd be the first to kind of admit it, right?
Of course.
So, I think that's the situation you're in. But, you know, there's a whole host of very, very good young players who are coming through. And the under-21 side was a really good team. And let's see how they do. I mean, I think we hit rock bottom, and we're slowly climbing back out. I mean, with a guy like, well, Maurizio Sarri, for example, is achieving in Naples mm-hmm. With his style of play. The style of play in general in Serie A, you know, there's so many teams from Napoli to Roma who go out and try to play. Some of the bad teams try to play too. You know, just watch Benevento this year. I know they're bottom of the table, but they'll go out. And I think that's good because that's how, you know, that's where modern football is today. You know, teams trying to play and not just sitting and countering. And yeah, so I think, you know, I think he's just off base on that one.
You know, it's funny that to me, this is one of the best Serie A's I've seen in a long, long time. We see the brilliance of Napoli. You saw what Juventus did. We see Roma in the semi-final. We've seen a resurgent Milan under Gattuso starting to look like they're getting their act together. And why would you leave if you're an Italian player? Because you've got everything at home now. The money's there with the Chinese money and the foreign investment. Why would you leave? I mean, so, you know, when Verratti left a few years ago, Italian football was in a slump. And, you know, it's not the same Serie A as what we saw, you know, after Mourinho left, whenever Italian football sort of had that downturn. Now we see a wonderfully exciting Serie A. There's going to be a number of ins and outs this summer. I know this is not something, it's a speculation, but Anthony Martial been heavily linked with Juventus. Another young lad that everyone seems to like is Milinkovic-Savic. Do you see either of those two moving in the summer?
I mean, I think with Martial, it's also going to depend what happens in Russia. But, you know, I think it's, what is he now, 22, 23?
23, yeah.
I mean, if he's not going to be a regular for Manchester United, I think it's entirely fair that, you know, he goes to the club and say, look, you know, I don't want to have an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer type career.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play regularly, you know? And I think that's entirely legitimate. And if you're United, if he has a good World Cup, then you can go and get some money back for him. Decent money. I mean, look, the same thing happened with Memphis Depay, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know Depay became sort of a running joke, but Depay is a really, really talented player.
Absolutely.
Who, for many different reasons, didn't work out at United. United got what I thought was a really good fee for him, given how low his stock had fallen. And now he's doing really, really well again. So, I don't think there's a problem with that. I mean, I think, and I don't think Mourinho would have a problem with Martial going if he feels it doesn't fit into his plans.
What about Milinkovic-Savic?
Wow.
How highly do you rate him? Do you think he leaves?
I think Lazio will sell if they get a big enough offer. I don't think that's in question. The curious thing about Milinkovic-Savic is that he's such and anybody who hasn't seen him, you can go on YouTube and see him. He's such an unusual player because you're talking about a guy who is basically an attacking midfielder and he's the size of a house. I mean, he's just so big and so strong and he's got little man skills. I was talking to somebody who said that, as Milinkovic, and he's still raw, he can still improve. Mm-hmm. He said that Milinkovic-Savic, what he should hope for is to become a Frank Lampard type. I don't know that he has the intelligence or the stamina of intelligence in terms of reading the game mm-hmm. that Lampard had or indeed the stamina that Lampard had in terms of making all those runs from midfield to attack and getting around the pitch. I do think he is somebody where you would need to kind of build the team around him. Mm-hmm. My fear when I hear him linked to United is that people think, oh, look, he's another big, tall guy who's big and strong and, his last name ends in an ick. Right. Oh, look, we're getting another Matic. And no, he's not like that at all.
It's just interesting. He's such a heavily linked name that so many people talk about him. I doubt half of them have ever watched him. But, video games are responsible for a lot of this madness. But, Gab, listen, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Let's not leave it so long. The next time I get you back on, Serie A is such a fascinating league and there's very few voices that are more clued in than your own when it comes to Serie A, so it's always brilliant to have you on. Enjoy watching you on ESPN. So all the best, Gab. Thanks, mate.
Thanks so much. Take care, man.
Cheers, pal. Bye.